This Morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
First approval for an Obamacare replacement. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, Thursday, March 9. Welcome aboard. Here's what we have for you this hour.
In the wee hours of the morning, the House Ways and Means Committee approved a Republican plan to supplement the Affordable Care Act. That said, there's still plenty of opposition.
The FBI is investigating how documents about CIA electronic spying techniques were leaked.
A new report from Customs and Border Patrol says illegal crossings in the Southwest dropped 40% last month.
And how to avoid the worst-case scenarios on board an airplane.
There are ways of minimizing disruptive passengers. I mean, the red eye is a really great example. Red eye flight, I think that there are, you can pick the right flight, for example. You can pick the right class of service. If you can afford to fly in business class or first class, you're far less likely to be next to a screaming child.
Chris Advocate, consumer advocates, on how you can prevent experiencing things like disruptive passengers. He's here later in the hour. The House Ways and Means Committee at ODARC 30 this morning approved the Republican plan to replace Obamacare. Meanwhile, hospital groups, the AARP and the American Medical Association are urging House Republicans to slow down, saying too many people could lose insurance. Formal debate began yesterday. Democrats like New Jersey Congressman Frank Pallone would like to see an estimate of its cost or coverage losses from the Congressional Budget Office.
They don't talk about how their bill is going to create a better way for these people to get health care or to improve their lives.
Also, some Republicans want more generous government support for programs that help people get coverage, but some conservative lawmakers don't want a new set of tax credits. Here's White House spokesman Sean Spicer.
Make no mistake, the president is very proud of the product that we have produced. We are out in full sell mode all around the country talking about how we think this is the best way to solve the problem that the American people face.
Meanwhile, fewer tax credits could hurt support in the Senate, where there are more centrist Republicans. The credits would be pegged to age and would phase out for higher income earners. The FBI is investigating how an apparent document release wound up in the hands of WikiLeaks with pages of material detailing CIA hacking tools. The trove of more than 8,000 documents is said to show how the CIA breaks into computers, smartphones, messaging apps, and even smart TVs. These are tools developed by a mix of people, including outside contractors, CIA employees, and staffers at the National Security Agency. White House spokesman Sean Spicer.
Anybody who leaks classified information will be held to the highest degree of law. We will go after people who leak classified information. We will prosecute them to the full extent of the law.
The Wall Street Journal says more than a dozen companies work for the CIA formulating and testing hacking tools, and that's where the FBI will focus its probe. The agency became aware last year that information about its hacking operations had been taken. One contractor mentioned frequently in the documents, Zetron, appears to have played a significant role in testing and building hacking tools. The company is owned by Northrop Grumman. Well, the CIA has declined to confirm whether the leaked documents were authentic or comment on the status of any investigation. Meanwhile, WikiLeaks calls it the largest intelligence publication in history. What now? More from Patrick Tucker, technology editor at Defense One. Patrick, what's up?
One reason why a lot of people are in a lot of alarm, and the CIA doesn't comment as to whether or not this is real or this isn't real, but a lot of people are saying this looks like information, like documents, tools, and things that the CIA would actually use. And if you look at them, though, the level of alarm that different people have had about them, it's at first a lot of alarm, but then you dial it back and you realize what you're actually looking at. So some of the tools that they've talked about include methods for breaking or undermining very common, very popular encrypted messaging apps like Signal and WhatsApp and even Confide, which is the sort of newer encrypted app that is popular among people in the Trump administration who like to leak to the press. But at the same time, a slightly closer inspection shows that Many of these encryption hacking tools can only be compromised using these tools if you actually have the physical phone itself. And there's a big difference between the CIA creating a cyber weapon that's going to break encryption on everyone's phone if it falls into the wrong hands, and a technique that a particular agent can use in the field as part of an operation to get a certain outcome. Now, here's the weird part, though. If you look at the actual thing that WikiLeaks dumped in the morning, there's a portion of it that speaks to the CIA kind of like offensive cyber weapons office, the office that actually makes these exploits and accesses. It's called Umbrage, and they say that Umbrage, WikiLeaks says this, Umbrage has stolen malware from Russian intelligence and military sources, and they can now use that to conduct hacking operations, to conduct cyber theft, and make it look like the Russians. So immediately, I read that, and a lot of other people read that. We sort of scratched our head for a moment, and we said, now this is starting to make sense a little bit. Yesterday, Russia Insider, and then RT, and then Sputnik, and then after that, Drudge Report, and then after that, Breitbart can all write articles and say, wait a minute, every time you hear about Russian hacking, you have to assume it's the CIA now. And that's the ultimate outcome of what this entire event actually means for everyone.
We're speaking with Patrick Tucker, technology editor at Defense One. His piece is called CIA Silent as WikiLeaks Claims to Publish Thousands of Agency Files. Did I read too, or do I understand that WikiLeaks actually withheld some stuff that may have been more sensitive?
Yeah, they redacted some names. They say that that's in order to protect certain people's identities, including sources that may be have been involved in the document dump. And they also say that they redacted some information so that they don't further proliferate the dispersal of cyber tools and cyber weapons. So they block some things out so that particular cyber weapons don't fall into the hands of more and more people, they claim. Which is a very unusual thing for WikiLeaks. They're very much known for just taking the entire file and throwing it up online and violating the privacy of a lot of people that are contained in those files, that sort of thing. So this is, at very least, a sign that they've learned basic etiquette and manners. But it's still a troubling development, particularly for the CIA. And a lot of people that I've talked to from a communications perspective, because right now their future communication strategy is being undermined from right out from under them, and there's very little that they're doing about it, because this is going to keep haunting them for months and months into the future, perhaps for years. Every time they observe something related to Russian cyber espionage activity, an entire sort of wing of media will suddenly start posting articles saying you can't trust the CIA when they cry Russian hacking, because they have these stolen malware tools and they probably did it themselves. And that's just going to follow them around for months, if not years.
Thanks, Patrick. Patrick Tucker, technology editor at Defense One. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state, unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices helped it become a leader in industries that range from agribusiness and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org, because helping business grow is pure Michigan. Thanks for being with us. Calling it encouraging news, Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly announced that illegal Southwest border crossings were down 40% last month. Does this mean President Trump's rhetoric and immigration policies are having an effect? Here's This Morning's Dave Duncan.
According to data from Customs and Border Patrol, the 40% drop from January to February is far outside normal seasonal trends. Typically, the January to February change is actually an increase of 10 to 20%. The drop breaks a nearly 20-year trend. The number was roughly 19,000 people in February, down from about 32,000 in January. It will still take months to figure out if the decrease in apprehensions is an indication of a lasting Trump administration effect. Gordon?
Thank you, Dave. CNN, by the way, says that the sharp downtick after an uptick at the end of the Obama administration could fit the narrative that it takes tough rhetoric on immigration, backed up by policy, to get word-of-mouth warnings to illegal immigrants making the harrowing journey to the border. It's 19 minutes now after the hour. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Border Republican leaders are laboring to rally a divided party behind their high-stakes drive to overhaul the nation's health care system, but face opposition from pivotal industry groups. White House spokesman Sean Spicer says the bill has President Trump's support.
Make no mistake, the president is very proud of the product that we have produced. We are out in full sell mode all around the country talking about how we think this is the best way to solve the problem that the American people face.
But the GOP health care measure faces strong opposition from conservative Republicans and Democrats like Congressman Mike Doyle of Pennsylvania.
For 7 years, you promised the American people you're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. And this is what you've come up with. This is a bad joke.
The House Ways and Means Committee approved the measure this morning after 18 hours of debate. The Department of Veterans Affairs will offer urgent mental health care beginning this summer to thousands of former service members with less than honorable discharges, part of its expanded initiative to stem high rates of suicide. VA Secretary David Shulkin says the additional coverage is needed to help former service members who are more likely to have mental health distress. President Trump's administration is reportedly weighing a deployment of up to 1,000 U.S. soldiers to Kuwait to serve as a reserve force in the fight against ISIS. Reuters is reporting that proponents of the option say it would provide U.S. commanders on the ground greater flexibility to quickly respond to challenges on the battlefield. President Trump has offered former Utah Governor John Huntsman the position as U.S. ambassador to Russia, a high-profile and sensitive post amid investigations into contacts between Russian officials and the Trump campaign. Huntsman has twice before served as an ambassador. It was used as a backdrop for the Game of Thrones TV series and was featured in the 1981 movie Clash of the Titans, but now it's gone. The Azure Window, a natural rock arch that jutted onto the Sea of Malta, has collapsed in a storm. Geologists say the limestone pillar that supported the arch gave way, hurt by years of erosion by sea swells.
Yikes. All right. Thank you, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well, at Gordon Deal. Think about your neighborhood for just a moment. So generally speaking, would you say you're part of a community that's pretty well-versed in personal finance? A new study offers a look into the best and worst cities in America when it comes to money management. More from Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. Kelly, give us a summary of these findings from WalletHub.
WalletHub.com had taken a really in-depth look at a lot of big cities, not just the usual suspects, but they actually looked at more than 2,500 cities around the country, looking on indicators like your debt-to-income ratios, your credit scores, share of adults who are delinquent on their debts, have filed for bankruptcy protection, all of these different indicators that would really tell you how well you're doing financially, and then they ranked them. So we took a look and saw what consumers might want to think about, depending on where their city is on that list.
So before naming some of the cities, then, did it reason that the cities that might be better off or have nicer homes were the better personal finance managers?
Definitely, when you look at the list, there are some trends. Like, you see a lot of college towns fall low in the list because those, of course, are areas where you've got a lot of student debt and some newbies to credit, so their credit scores can be quite low. And there is also a little bit of income disparity there, where you see some of the cities that are high on the list tend to be wealthier, so you would assume they have lower debt-to-income ratios, higher credit scores, and they're doing a lot of things that are right on that front.
Mm. All right, so name some of the cities, then, maybe at the higher end and lower end of the spectrum.
So because they looked at so many cities, they did this where it's not even really, they do rank them, but you're really talking about like the top of the top here. And there were a list of 38 cities, and some of the ones that were higher even within that top percentage, Cupertino, California, Lexington, Massachusetts, Scarsdale, New York, Palo Alto, California, some of these that, not too surprising there, McLean, Virginia, even my own hometown of Fort Lee, not top percentage there, but we're within the top 75 cities, so that was kind of nice to see.
All right, and then on the lower end?
On the lower end of things, so some of the worst would be East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, Jonesboro, Georgia, Fairburn, Georgia, College Station, Texas, Maple Heights, Ohio. I'm just sort of picking names off this bottom percentage here. You know, so there's a pretty broad spectrum, you know, not just, you know, particular states that tend to show up.
We're speaking with Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. Her piece is called "When It Comes to Money Management, People in These Cities Are the Best and the Worst." It's an extensive list. So what do you do? Your city's on the list, and, you know, maybe it's on the lower end. Are there things you can do?
There definitely are, and it's sort of a nice nudge to be able to look at this. And, you know, one of the first things people can really do is be cautious about getting those payments in on time, even if you can only make the minimum, making sure that you're avoiding any sort of a late payment, because that is something that can have costs that add up over time, particularly on a bigger balance owed like a mortgage, where the late fee is going to be a percentage of what you owe, not just a flat amount. That's going to be to help you avoid some of those fees, and it's also going to help you improve your credit, because a lot of cases that's a black mark that sticks with you for quite a number of years.
Thanks, Kelly. Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com, also a personal financial advisor, certified financial planner, I should say. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Are you looking for a great wine at a great price? The solution is Cameron Hughes Wines. He's got a fascinating story. Cameron Hughes has relationships with these high-end wineries and producers all around the world, where he sources his wine and sells direct to you for much less than you'd pay under other labels. His wines deliver on price, value, and quality. Best price, best wine, quality guaranteed. The best part is Cam guarantees all his wines. If you're unhappy with any bottle you buy from him, he'll make it right. Now, Cameron Hughes doesn't typically offer discounts because his prices are so much less than retail, but he's offering our listeners a fantastic deal on your first order of three or more bottles, free shipping on that order, and a sommelier-grade corkscrew, only if you go to chwine.com and use my code DEAL. The only way to get free shipping and your free sommelier corkscrew, go to chwine.com. chwine.com. Shop for your wine, enter my code DEAL at checkout. Don't wait, it's a limited time offer. This wine is fantastic, the deal is phenomenal, and I want you to go online and order it today. Again, chwine.com with the code DEAL.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Thursday, March 9, Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. The House Ways and Means Committee approved a GOP plan to replace Obamacare in the wee hours. FBI probing the source of the leaked CIA documents. Circa News reports the FBI probed a Trump business computer and found nothing relevant about ties to Russia. 40% drop last month in illegal border crossings in the Southwest. Wildfires in four prairie states have killed six people. AT&T customers couldn't call 911 for a few hours yesterday. And teenagers feeling interrogated about their college plans. That story in about 20 minutes. Redistribution of wealth has moved from being a subtext in the national debate over health care to being the core of it. Karen Tumulty, national political reporter at The Washington Post, joins us now to explain her story. Karen, set this up.
Well, first of all, redistribution of wealth is one of the most radioactive things that you can say about anything in politics. And the debate over health care really always has been on some level about, you know, what do we owe the poorest and most helpless people in our society, and, you know, what should wealthier people have to give up to give it to them? But in the past, when we've had these health care debates, and they have all the way at least as far back as Harry Truman, politicians would really rather talk about something else. They'd rather talk about how they're going to cover everybody who doesn't have insurance, or how they're going to cut costs, or how quality is going to be improved. They always like to talk about it as though this is not some kind of zero-sum game, that you can do everything without having to sacrifice anything. What really is different now is that for the first time with this release of this House Republican plan, you're talking about taking something away that people have and replacing it with something else. And so for really the first time, redistribution of income in our society is now front and center of this debate, meaning the Democrats in particular are going to say this is really all about giving tax breaks to the wealthy and at the expense of poor people.
Mm. All right, so was this part of the argument under Obamacare, or is this now come front and center under this proposed replacement?
There were certainly a lot of redistributional effects of the Affordable Care Act. It did, it required young people to pick up the burden for older people, particularly with this requirement that they have to buy insurance. There were a lot of new taxes on the rich, which was a transfer of wealth to the poor. And, of course, these provisions that are the most popular, such as telling insurance companies that they can't deny coverage to people with pre-existing conditions, made everybody's insurance more expensive. So you can argue that that was another distribution of the, the healthy had to pick up part of the cost for the sick.
We're speaking with Karen Tumulty, national political reporter at The Washington Post, and she's written a piece called "The Debate Over the Affordable Care Act is Really a Debate Over Wealth Distribution." So the messaging here from folks like House Speaker Paul Ryan, right, as you point out, is that the measures they've introduced will increase competition and give consumers more choices. But can they sell that message, I guess? Right? That's the part of the question here.
There's something else really extraordinary that is happening here that I have, covered Washington for a long time. And that is, they are putting out this bill and putting it through the committee process and are going to take it right up to the floor probably next week without ever having sent it to the Congressional Budget Office for what is called scoring. So they basically, everybody is going to be asked, at least in committee, to vote on this thing without knowing, what's the best independent analysis of how much it's going to cost and who it's going to end up covering. And so while the Republicans and Paul Ryan are saying people will have choice, the real question is whether who's going to be able to afford that choice that they have. And it's kind of a risky strategy here for them to go ahead and proceed on this bill and get it right up to the floor without having those independent, nonpartisan numbers in hand.
Thanks, Karen. Karen Tumulty, national political reporter at The Washington Post. It's 21 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Transition seamlessly from presentation to meeting and from work to home with the Dell Latitude 13 7000 series, the laptop that takes care of business. The powerful performance and incredible battery life from this reliable business-class PC featuring Intel Core processors lets small business employees do their best work wherever work takes them. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio. Thanks for being with us on this Friday eve. This is normally the spot where we would bring in Mike Gavin, but we do have some news about Mike Gavin that we need to share. And that's that he's on vacation this week. He'll be back next week. Everybody's got a story about their worst flight ever, right? The chatterbox next to you, the person throwing up across the aisle, the screaming baby, an argument over a reclining seat, a canceled flight, lost luggage, of course, the occasional obnoxious drunk. But consumer advocate Chris Elliott says there are things you can do to mostly avoid these scenarios. Chris, you've got some cringe-worthy examples.
Yeah, I like the one with projectile vomit, right? You'll have to read the story. I'm not going to go into details. But it is, you're right, it's cringeworthy. There are a lot of folks, and this is the time of year, by the way, when a lot of people are having worst flights ever because, it's spring break. People are flying that maybe don't fly very often. And this just happened to me last week on a flight. People love to drink for some reason before a flight. And the woman sitting next to me had way too much the night before, and she had to call, press the flight attendant call button, ask if there a doctor on board. We had to turn back and go to the gate because she was so hungover.
Oh my goodness!
It's like this is happening right now, and you could be on a flight where it happens.
Man, so did they actually turn the flight around, or you made an emergency landing somewhere?
No, we were at JFK, and we turned around. The flight was delayed about an hour and a half.
Oh,
turned around,
man.
Brought her back to the gate.
Wow.
But, there are all kinds of bad things that happen. my point just is that it happens a lot more often this time of the year because of the whole spring break thing, a lot of people flying and a lot of people drinking. You know, we just had Mardi Gras. So there's a lot of potential for people to experience something like I wrote about, which I'm not going to go into details on, but, you know, preview projectile vomit on their next flight. And it's a bad situation. It really is.
All right. So, yeah, fair enough. Also, too, you quote that one flight attendant who said, listen, I know airlines, she said, basically, I know airlines, we have our issues, but 90% of issues on board the flight have to do with other passengers. And she specifically points out the drinking. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. She makes a valid point. I kind of wish in the end that I hadn't have given her the last word in the story, because it looks like I was coming across as being pro-airline, and I really don't like to take sides. But there are ways of minimizing disruptive passengers. I mean, the red eye is a really great example. Red-eye flights, those are the overnight flights, typically are taken by people who are they're professionals. They're going from one place to the next. They're not on vacation necessarily. So you find a lot of people sleeping on those flights. And that's really a great way of avoiding the chatty Cathy sitting next to you. Is you just put down your shade, get your pillow, and just go to sleep. And I think that there are, you can pick the right flight, for example. You can pick the right class of service. If you can afford to fly in business class or first class, you're far less likely to be next to a screaming child.
We're speaking with Chris Elliott, consumer advocate, also author of a book called How to Be the World's Smartest Traveler, and his piece is called How to Avoid the Worst Flight Ever. You point out, too, in one of your bullet points, know your rights, meaning what with regards to this?
Every airline has what's called a contract of carriage. You can find it on its website, and it outlines what your legal rights are. It's a legal agreement between you and the airline, and a lot of people don't even know that it exists. Contract of carriage, or sometimes also called conditions of carriage. If you ever have any questions about what your rights are, go look that up, and you'll find out things like, you know, how much compensation am I owed if there's a mechanical delay? What if my flight is canceled? Can I get a refund? All those questions are in the contract of carriage.
Thanks, Chris. Consumer advocate Chris Elliott. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Florida Republican leaders are working hard to rally a divided party behind their high-stakes drive to overhaul the nation's health care system, but they're facing opposition from conservatives within the party and pivotal industry groups such as Dr. Andrew Gurman's American Medical Association.
People who have insurance shouldn't lose it. People who don't have insurance should get it, that the care needs to be affordable, accessible. And when we went down the list of all the different things in this bill, we found that it fails to meet AMA policy on any number of levels.
The House Ways and Means Committee passed the measure this morning after 18 hours of debate. Two senior senators, Lindsey Graham and Sheldon Whitehouse, have asked the FBI and Justice Department for any information they have on President Trump's claim that his predecessor wiretapped him during the presidential campaign. White House spokesman Sean Spicer was asked yesterday if Trump is the subject of a probe.
There is no reason that we have to think that the president is the target of any investigation whatsoever.
Under U.S. law, presidents cannot direct wiretapping. Instead, the federal government can ask a court to authorize the action, but it must provide justification. The FBI is looking into the leak of a huge trove of hacking tools apparently used by the CIA. And the Wall Street Journal says the initial focus is likely to fall on contractors the spy agency hired. The possibility that a contractor may have been to blame for such a potentially damaging leak is sure to renew scrutiny of the use of outside experts to conduct highly classified work. The Trump administration is considering more than $6 billion in cuts to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, including a $2 billion cut from funds dedicated to public housing. It would also eliminate the Community Development Block Grant Program, which funds local improvement efforts and anti-poverty programs. More proof that Beyoncé's reach is far and wide. A category this week on Jeopardy was called Becky with the Good Hair. The category featured pop culture characters named Becky, like Rebecca from Cheers, Becky Thatcher from Tom Sawyer, and Becky from the TV show Empire. As Bay fans all know, Becky with the Good Hair is a lyric from the Lemonade track, Sorry.
Got that on your workout playlist, do you?
That's a good one.
6 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org, because helping business grow is pure Michigan. Glad you're with us. Anxiety over college admissions is reaching a fever pitch as high school seniors await decisions from colleges for next fall. Making it worse, a barrage of unwelcome and inappropriate questions from prying adults. Sales of t-shirts reading, "Don't ask me about college, thanks," are rising on Redbubble. Some parents make their homes a college-free zone and ban all talk on the topic. One expert tells the Wall Street Journal that a good rule of thumb for adults is to avoid all abbreviations. In other words, don't ask about ACTs, SATs, GPAs, UCLA, or UNC. For students, try a politician's approach with something clever like, "I don't know about that, but I'm really looking forward to being on the East Coast somewhere." The admissions process is dragging on longer for more students, too. 16% more students offered waitlist positions in 2015 than 2014, leaving some in limbo as late as August. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Hey, thanks for listening. If you love our show, we'd love it if you took a few minutes to give us a review on iTunes. And while you're at it, make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the handle @ThisMorningShow.